Welcome to Five Star Radio. Consider this your warning. Hey there, cats, kittens, my coffin in the car. Having just, and I say just exited the United Center here in Chicago, in the state of Illinois, the country of the United States of America, where I witnessed TJ Dillashaw defend for the second consecutive time his bantamweight championship of the world as he absolutely put on a clinic when facing Mr. Henan Barao. He just beat him in every way, shape, and form. The only thing he did not do is get what I would call a UFC takedown. Although he did have a takedown. In amateur wrestling, if somebody shoots, if you shoot on somebody and they sprawl out and get behind you, that's a takedown for them. So that's a takedown. But nonetheless, he outstruck him and outstruck him and outstruck him. And it was what he was last time, except for with more confidence. He did less back and forth and more side to side. In the pocket, my goodness, the man's ability to move left to right. I think people call that lateral movement. I always wonder sometimes it's lateral. I think it's lateral. Not literal. it was just scary how good it was. Really, I mean, it was just like, what the fuck do you do with a guy like this? And it worked so well with Barao, and Barao just never could get anything going. And then TJ would take a minute or two here and there to just wear out Barao, brought him against that cage, and just drained his life. It's like watching a video game. You can just see the life bar dying. And, you know, TJ Dillashaw went on out there and put on just a masterful performance. Whatever switch got flipped, you know, we talked about in the shit-ass pre-show preview, which with the terrible microphone. Still trying to figure that out. I did get a new cord. I think that'll fix everything. But, you know, the evolution of TJ Dillashaw into what we see today, it's still got weaknesses. His hands are a little, I mean, no one ever wants your hands that low, but maybe that allows them to feel more at ease when you move. In theory, you should be able to move around with your hands up like that. But you know what? The hands being low, that's the punches come from different angles and so on and so forth. So, hey, what can you say? He went out there and then he almost had Barao done in the third round. And instead, he just had to come out and start the fourth round. Got right in his face. Barao landed an okay shot here and there. Like, it wasn't like he was completely out of it. But TJ was just far quicker, and it really was the fulfillment of a cliche of he was giving three and taking one. And the ones that TJ were taking, he either glancing, and he was hitting hard shots. And I just remember one punch, I think it was a clubbing right hand. I say clubbing deliberately. He just clubbed him with it. And you just saw Barao like, what the fuck? And you could see the eyes of Barao go out. And he took, like, must have been a dozen, maybe two dozen more punches after that. Herb Dean was in there. I mean, Barao was, he was moving. He didn't fall down. He threw punches. You want to give a guy every benefit of the doubt, I guess, when it comes to the championship fight, which is kind of stupid because it's like we say, yes, your health is worth it if you get a shiny piece of gold that holds no value. I mean, it does. You know what I mean? But as a society, we just have decided to acknowledge and accept that when people go for true acts of greatness, that we will let them suffer badly. But you know what? Take CM Punk if he fights in the UFC. For him to fight, to go from nothing to somebody in a year or whatever, to fight, he should be allowed to take all the damage possible to try to get that win. For a lot of guys, getting a win in the UFC is just as big of a career accomplishment as becoming a world champion. For somebody like me, if I ever had a shot in the UFC, I would be realistic and know that I'm never going to probably fight for the lightweight championship. Maybe the welterweight. Nah. But, you know, for some guys, getting that one win. Now, if it's a journeyman guy or something like that, that's fine. Jim Miller and Danny Castillo, neither one of those guys needed to take any damage or anything like that. So be it. Protect the guys who've been around forever and you know where they stand. And Miller and Danny Castillo had a good fight. It was a little disappointing. Miller, it just seems like he really has lost his step. If I felt very confirmed in my analysis by almost everything that happened tonight. Castillo was quicker, needed to move a little bit more. He probably got hurt. The one judge had a 30-27 for Miller, and the rumblings in press row, it was kind of like, what? But whatever, I mean, it was a close enough fight that if it goes 29-28 either way, it is what it is. I had the first two rounds split and had Castillo winning the third round, and basically by getting that takedown side control. I hate awarding rounds based on control and positioning only, but like the first round, they both had takedowns, they both got on top, and neither guy did any actual damage. Castillo landed a few punches and a few elbows. Miller, though, got the mount, threatened, but he didn't do anything with it. No damage was inflicted due to Castillo's ability to tie him up and keep close on the body. And so Miller, he tried like a triangle into an armbar, but it never seemed close. But, if you're going to look, you got to figure out something to separate the two. I'll go with the guy that got the mount, I guess. I don't know. But it was a fight. The fight was okay. I'm all over the place. The semi-main event was Misha Boobs McGee Tate beating Evil Eye, Jessica Evil Eye, and a very fun fight. I enjoyed it a great deal. Boobs were everywhere, and it was just... Who could not enjoy boobs? Everybody can enjoy boobs. Everybody. Except for heterosexual women. Maybe they're the problem with the world. Of course, you could probably argue that if a heterosexual man not enjoying penis is the problem with the world. Huh. It's us heteros that are the outliers. But anyways, there's a sentence you don't hear often. Heterosexuals are the outlier. What? What fucking part of San Francisco are you in? Somebody fought out of San Francisco tonight. I cannot fucking for the life of me remember who it was. And somebody was like, wait, what? But it was, Jessica Eye showing better technical stand-up, better boxing for sure. Stuffed enough of Misha's takedowns, and she was winning the fight in the first round on the feet. She was, the jab in particular, everything was keying off that jab, and she's showing the jab, showing the jab, showing the jab, and every time she did, she just snapped Tate's head back. It was very effective. I don't want to laud too much praise on it, but it was good. It's not as good as Holly Holm's jab, maybe, but still, it did the job. However, there's a thing that sometimes happens when people fight, and that's the other guy punches you, hits you. That's a radar detector. I'll turn it off, because I'm not going to speed. And if I do, I've broken so many other laws in the process, so who cares, right? In that, that other thing was, Misha Tate's got her right hand, and she crushed Jessica Eye with it in the first round. Just blasted her in the face. Yes, I know what I said. And I went sprawling down to the canvas. Tate got on top. And instead of, like, swarming for ground and pound, she seemed like she wanted to try to turn it into an immediate grappling battle. And which was funny because sometimes you might do that if you think the guy is actually really dangerous as a guard or whatever. But Misha Tate, of the two of them, I would say is far, far better on the ground. And instead, she just kind of allowed it to get to half guard and let I tie her up and ride out the round. In the second round, they did more of the same, and boom, Tate hit her with a shot, and they went down. And not quite as heavy a shot, but it kind of rocked her. And that time, Tate seemed a little more willing, I guess, to pounce and try to ground and pound, but it didn't work. And then in the third round, more of the same, basically. You could tell in the third round, it was kind of like a fucked up stand-up exchange. Because I was the better striker. But Tate had the more usable power. And I knew she had to watch out for the power, basically just the big right hand of Tate. And Tate had to watch out for everything that I did. But Tate knew that if she got that one punch, she could rearrange the fight. And her face. And her eyes.
So I was, you know, trying to fight aggressive. It was a little pitter-patter-ish for me. A lot of inside kicks and jabs. Everything she did was keying off her left side. She was throwing the left high kick, the switch kick, the kick to the thighs, kick to the midsection, kick to the head, punching off the head. And I don't think she was hurt on the right side. Maybe she was. I think she was more just hiding it and looking to let it loose when Tate was dropping her guard. But they got on the ground, and Tate took her back and had her back, and they all locked up. Eve Levine then stood them up as nothing at all happened. I have no idea what the fuck was going on. Maybe you guys watching on TV know, because I sure as shit don't. I mean, if Eve Levine does something, as a general rule, I'm going to trust it, because I think Eve Levine's really fucking good. Like, really fucking good. I was talking to Fatty and Tony, and he said that it sounded like maybe Tate was talking to him. Maybe she said she wanted to stand up. It's possible that I was violating the rules. Maybe she was grabbing Tate's gloves, and Levine said, "Do you want to be here? You know, it's your choice, victim's choice, if you will. If you're the victim of a foul that fucks with you, you can either be in that position or you want to stand up." And I guess maybe Tate said stand up. I don't know. She did get hit with some knees as she stood up and she shot in again. But nothing too major. And she won the fight. I think it was 30-27 on all the cards. So Misha Tate now put together another win. She's the only fighter to ever make Ronda Rousey fight. Like, every other fight in Ronda Rousey's career it's getting progressively easier. Like, absurdly easier. She's going from, you know, a minute to 16 seconds to 14 seconds in Betch Kohea next week. Look, I like Betch Kohea. I think she's got a little personality to her. I like the way she shakes her ass. And I mean that actually in a non-sexual way. She's gonna fucking die. Like, she's a dead woman. I don't even know if I'm gonna get to do a formal preview of the show. Part of that's because the show really depresses the shit out of me. Just fuck that. But yeah, I don't know. But Misha, you know, the first time they fought, yeah, she lost in the first round, but that's the toughest round of Ronda's career at that point. And obviously the second time they went into the third round, again, the toughest Ronda's ever had. Misha's she's a fighter, man. She's a scrapper. She's somebody that knows how to dig deep and push and fight. And, you know, personally, it's something I'm learning to develop in my life. I'm a pussy. I have good technique. I know. You ask me to show something, I can show it perfectly. I can execute it perfectly. But in real time, I oftentimes have trouble going for things too quickly and being mean and all that stuff. And especially with wrestling. Like, I have a pretty darn good shot, all things considered. And a lot of times I'll get into a position where I should easily take someone down, but I don't. Because I don't have that extra gear of meanness I think that you need. So I've been developing it, and I literally will be in the middle of practice, and I'll be shooting, and if the guy starts to sprawl, I'll tell myself, and I actually say in my head, "Don't be a pussy. Don't be a pussy." And I drive forward. I'm learning it. Misha Tate's got that. She can turn it to that next level. And now the difference is somebody like Ronda is always at that level. She doesn't need to turn it up. And she's all jacked up now, looking like a fucking freak bodybuilder or whatever the fuck it is. I don't know. She'll probably look fine for fight time, but who knows what's going on there. But yeah, and then we had Edson Barboza and Paul Felder in the most blood sportish fight you'll ever see. I am pretty sure they set a record for the most number of spinning attacks thrown in a fight. The highlight of the fight by far was Edson Barboza throwing a spinning back kick to the midsection. And by midsection, I mean the cock and balls of Paul Felder. It was so dead on. It was, usually, you know, guys get kicked in the nuts, and the crowd goes, "Oh," and all that shit, and everybody's like, "Oh." But it's more or less like, you know, a nut shot. We see it a lot. Sometimes guys get kind of punted. Sometimes the kick rises up, whatever. This was so bad, so painful looking, that everybody was just pretty much universally thinking, "What the fuck? How is he alive? He should not be alive now. Holy jeez, please, Paul, don't. Ah, we're all going to talk in active fire because of this." I mean, it was just brutal. And the rest of the fight, it was, you know, Felder showed that he could hang with Barboza. Barboza was just quicker. I think he's just simply a better athlete. His boxing, when he let his hands go, it's really weird when Barboza lets go. Holy shit, this dude, as far as striking is concerned, what an animal. He has undeniably the best leg kicks in the lightweight division, if not all of MMA. And his boxing is outstanding. He mixes it up high and low. He pounds the body with reckless abandon, just digs in there deep, and it hurts, and it's ugly, and it, ow, and ooh, and yeah, you heard me. And so, it's some good shit. It is, and, you know what, Felder, though, that dude took a shot, and it's funny, in the fight before this, Joe Lozano and Takanori Gomi, and all four of those guys fight at lightweight. Felder, to me, actually seemed like the biggest of the four. I thought he was the closest to welterweight. And that's against Barboza, who's usually a giant-looking lightweight. But, I don't know, Felder just seemed like a big dude. But again, entertaining scrap, as it were. Then there was the unfortunate death of Takanori Gomi. Please stop fighting. It's... like, I don't think people have noticed it as much, but to me, it's just like, this is pathetic. It's embarrassing to everybody involved. Gomi came out like the Gomi of old. Kind of leans down a little bit, hangs over, paws, and loosely throws out his right hand as a jab feeler, wants to land the big left. And then Joe Lozon punched him in the head, took him down. With Gomi tried to escape, Lozon held on to the ankle. Dripped him, grabbed him, got him down, mount, got the back mount, flattened him out. And it wasn't just flattening him out. I mean, it was flattened the fuck out. And Gomi didn't know what to do. And that's not good if you haven't been paying attention to fighting for, you know, ever. He couldn't move. And Lozon starts hitting him and hitting him. And then the punches and the elbows start getting harder and harder. And I'm sitting there and I can see that all I see is the back of Gomi's head. So I see like his head like reverberating as the punches from Lozon are pounding his face. And I know he's out. But Herb Dean, I think, is right there and he's not stopping it. Joe Lozon gets up and walks away. He pulled the BJ Penn. He called off his own fight. And at that point, Gomi gets up to kind of his knees and looks around and Herb Dean's kind of like, please let this not be another Who's More Paul Harris situation. Then Herb Dean kind of looked at it and it's like, oh yeah, okay, it's over. So Joe Lozon, I mean, you know, a lot of guys in that situation just pound away. Hey, I get my free shots and shit like that. They're dickheads or whatever. Joe Lozon showed you can call it class. I mean, it's definitely classy. I don't think that if he had kept punching him, it would have been unclassy, as that is what you're instructed to do. Still, he knew the dude was out, and good for him. It was academic. It wouldn't have mattered. He could come back in there all day, every day, and beat the shit out of Takanori Gomi. I mean, nothing was going to change what happened right there. It was what it was. And Gomi died, and we all had to witness it. We all bore witness to that. Yeah. They can't all be winners, as I'm fond of saying and reminding everybody. Still, let's go, Gomi. Let's just not fight anymore. Undercard, headlined by Tom Lawler, knocking out John Vellante in the second round with a right hook. Could have seen this one coming 1,000 miles away, as all Lawler pretty much threw was that right hook. Like, that was his move. He had a light right hook, and sometimes a left, and sometimes a takedown attempt, but this motherfucker is standing up. He had a good right hook, and it was that lead right that I see out of guys who are wrestlers who are right-handed. It's a power right hook. It's a tough punch to throw normally, because most people have to try to learn to throw it from the left side with their left hand. But if you're a lefty and you throw it that way, it's great. And as a righty throwing it in from the southpaw position, again, you're throwing your power, a hook, a power punch with your strong hand, but it's really, really close. You cut down the time and distance it takes to get to a guy's head. Fuck yeah. That's why that shit works. Tom Lawler landed and cracked and knocked him out. Like, out. We talked about Jim Miller and Danny Castillo. Close fight. I can't really complain about it. Ben Saunders and Kenny Robertson. These two had a hell of a fucking fight. Ben Saunders got the win, even though I think I had it scored for Robertson. First round, he rocked Saunders good. It was mostly Saunders trying to use his distance a little bit, his length, and then if he's in tight, try to use the clinch. The problem is he's so long, and he's not super duper quick, that it allows guys to counter, and Robertson was getting in, and he was landing a number of shots repeatedly. He was beating him to the punch over and over again, and again, they went back and forth on the ground. It was all Saunders on the ground, and that's a bit misleading. It's more just he was able to hit or to tie up Robertson with that ridiculous guard of his. You can't call that an Eddie Bravo rubber guard. It's a body lock around the shoulder blades. And I don't even know how that works. Like, in theory, he could have actually pushed both of Robertson's elbows together and choked him out on both sides with a triangle choke, which would have been impossible. Well, I don't know if it's impossible. With legs like his, fuck, man, I don't know. But Saunders got the win. Good for him. It was a good fight. Both guys deserved to win. Neither deserved to lose type of deal. They both went out there and busted their ass, so kudos to them, right?
Right. Right.
Saunders to me is always going to be a perpetual disappointment. I always feel like he could be more than he is. It's just how it is in life. I don't know. And Brian Caraway and Eddie Wineland fought this fight. This was probably the worst fight of the night. Wineland just didn't fight. He was content to dance and jab, trying to, he was looking for the one shot. He was looking for that super clean, brilliant punch, and he was a better striker for sure. And Caraway got, one takedown, but Caraway pressed the action, and he was willing to, at points, to say, fuck it, I'm going to go throw. You're not hitting me anyways. You're not engaging. And so he'd throw these punches, and most of them would miss, but occasionally something would hit. Meanwhile, Eddie Wineland would miss punches badly, punches he should be missing. His accuracy was off. Eddie Wineland's last fight was January of 2014. So he's been out for a long time, and it showed. And it didn't show in your typical, he seemed gassed or anything. He just didn't have the timing on his punches. And for a guy like Wineland, he needs that timing. He is a one-punch knockout kind of guy. A sudden, explosive KO powers gentleman, if you will. And he didn't have it. So, sucks to suck for Eddie Wineland. Good job for Brian Caraway and Misha Tate. Become the first ever boyfriend and girlfriend to win their same fights on the same card. Yay! James Krause defeated Darren Cruikshank on the main event of the Fight Pass card. Really, really fun fight for the minute or two it lasted. Cruikshank came out, was aggressive, was shipping his punches, looked really, really good. All of a sudden, he got caught with a kick got caught, he got taken down, gave up his back, and he got choked out by Krause. Krause looked good himself. He was able to exchange on occasion on the feet. Didn't look overmatched or anything of the sort. So good on him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And then, we had what might have been the... we had Zach Cummings defeat Dominique Steele. Oh, yes, he's black. It's true. Knocked him out in the first round. And finally, we had Andrew Holbrook and Ramzi Najem went to a split decision with Holbrook winning. I thought Najem won the fight. Close enough fight. Decent fight. It's like one of those things where when you watch it, you're like, hey, good, I saw a good fight. But if you'd gone to go get pizza, you wouldn't have been like, oh, fuck, I can't believe I missed it. Unlike the other fight, which is probably fight of the night, although the main event was really, really, the last two fights were so good. I mean, realistically, the entire four-fight Fox card had everything you'd want. You know, brilliant title fights at the highest level of competition. You had a great stand-up affair between two lightweights who are creative and crazy. You had a dominating massacre. You had the two chicks go out there and really show why they're top five. Although when you look at that top five ranking, it's like, holy shit, I think Ronda's beat like everyone in the top five in like a year. Can Ronda Rousey be the first person to ever claim that she has defeated every single person in the top 10 of her division? She might be. Because every other division, you know, somebody, you know, the divisions fluctuate so much new talent comes in that there's so many guys in top 15, top 20. You know, it used to be, you know, top 10 was the top 10. Anything below that, oh, whatever. Nowadays, you know, if you're top 15, that means something. Being a top, you know, 15th best in the UFC, especially like lightweight or featherweight or something like that, that actually, to me, holds a little bit of prestige. I don't know where either of these ladies were ranked, though, however, with Elizabeth Phillips defeating Jessamyn Duke. This fight was really, really, really good. They fought once before. Duke is one of the four horsewomen, so she's, you know, and has Josh Barnett, so she's, you know, super duper long for the weight. Really tall, fights like a giraffe, has those, that kind of coordination. And she had, Duke had beaten Phillips before in an amateur fight. I think by submission. And you can see the submissions coming with her because they're all, I just use my long ass arms to choke you from positions that nobody can be choked from. But on the feet, it was all Phillips. I mean, Phillips was just quicker and more diverse. The length of Duke could not get her length established. Whether she's trying or doesn't know how, she's not good enough at it, I don't know. But she was just not able to consistently land and, you know, fight like you'd expect Stefan Struve to fight Big Nogueira next week, which would be... you know, use that jab or a front kick to really keep people away. And instead, she was content to kind of stand in the phone booth, and that's where Phillips had her best chance. And Phillips was just rattling off more punches. It was the two-for-one deal. And look at that. Two-for-one, one out again. It's my joke. I can make it if I want. Yeah, again, though, back and forth action, near finishes, great positioning. Both girls just showed a fucking fuckload of heart, and a fuckload of heart is a lot of fucking heart. Can't praise them enough. Probably would have to go with TJ Dillashaw and Henna Brow as probably the fight of the night. Because Hendon Brown, at least in the first round, was more competitive. He came out a lot more aggressive. He was light on his feet. I thought, hey, man, he made the weight cut easy, they said. And, you know, he was moving better. I thought, shit, the way he was fighting, I'm like, this could be a different fight. And then TJ just took over and just beat the shit out of him. And people were like, oh, Brown gassed. Oh, he gassed all right, because TJ gassed him. TJ jewed him. Good. He Auschwitzed him to death. Terrible thing to say. 5-star radio at halfguarded.com. Make sure to listen. Oh, whatever. I'm Jewish. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. Not even close. Catholics are kind of Jewy. Goes like Jewish, Catholic, and all the other shit. So, yeah. I'm a good... brother in arms with the Jews and shit like that. Love each other. Anyways, like, again, top to bottom though, excellent show. This is like the, I don't know, fifth show in a row the UFC has done that's been very good. Scotland was great. The show with Frank Mir and Todd Duffy ended well. Kind of boring up to the main event, but the last two fights were good, and the last fight was spectacular. Obviously, the Ultimate Fighter finale was very good. The UFC 189 started slow, but the pay-per-view portion was outstanding. I think this streak comes to a halt, a bad halt. UFC Brazil there. I do not have high expectations for this thing. I think it's going to be a very, very sad state of affairs when it's all said and done. And when it's all said and done, the words will be, this is a very sad state of affairs. You're going to see murders. You're going to see this old fucking losers being old fucking losers. You're going to see people hanging on way too long. I just, and I'm not even going to watch it live. We're going to have our first correspondent. I'm not sure who yet. Probably be Tony. Doing the play-by-play, because I'll be in northern Minnesota dealing with family issues. That sounds way worse than it is. But, yeah, but we got a whole week of stuff planned for you. We have so much, like, seriously, I know I say it, but we got a lot of really good content coming up. Like, already done content. And this says nothing of what's going to be breaking throughout the week that we nail and do better than anybody else here at halfguarded.com. I feel the momentum growing every day. I truly, truly do. Halfguarded.com is becoming something. And it's becoming something better than I thought it would be. The writers are better than I thought they would be. I was like, please let me just get people that could put together like two sentences and it's not embarrassing or, you know, Babinsack level. And instead I'm getting like people doing 2,000 words and it's really good, well written. We have arguments and positions and opinions. And I get the creative freedom to, instead of previewing a show properly, I can write a poem. You know how fucking happy I am that I get to write a poem instead of do a, well, this is what you're going to see in the main event. Blah, 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 blah. Because that's how I sound, I guess. I don't know. But, yeah, that was UFC on Fox Chicago. Fantastic show. Couldn't have had a better time, to be honest. Enjoyed the whole week. I want to say thanks again to Fabio Prada, lead jiu-jitsu coach. You saw him, the big black guy there with TJ Dillashaw and Danny Castillo, for stopping by the school on Wednesday, taking some time out, showing some cool techniques. It's so funny. At one point, like, I'm kind of drilling things and rolling, and he comes over to like correct the girl, because I try not to get too correcty with people, but. And then he sees me and goes, brother, hey, how are you? Oh, you grow a beard now. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Looks good. Hey, how are you? He's like the friendliest fucking guy in the world. Oh my gosh. Wish him luck above all others. I didn't get to see, Daniel Vandalay. No Rufus Sport guys on the card. They were scheduled for two with Pettis and Coke, and they both got injured. And I don't think that these are fake injuries. I think these are, real ones, because this would be a good show for them. Oh, well. Until we come back in a few days, Tuesday. The next 5-star radio is up on Tuesday at, I think, noon. And then we should have another one on Thursday at around noon. I'm not sure about the Thursday one. That one's a work in progress. So, check those out. Check out everything at halfguarded.com, because it's fucking amazing. And until that time comes, good fight. Good night, au revoir, mes amis.
I was a 5-star man before the internet. I'm damn sure a 5-star man now, okay? I just gotta drop the dead weight so I can shine.